Well, the appointed time has arrived. Call the meeting to order. Good morning and welcome, everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on December 4th, 2008. We welcome those of you who have joined us today both in person and listening to the webcast of this meeting. Today, the board will consider a recommendation to adopt an amendment to the board's rule on the frequency of inspections as it applies to certain foreign registered public accounting firms and seek public comment on other proposals also related to the inspections of non-U.S. firms. Before we proceed, I will note for the record that all members are present at today's meeting. The first and only order of business before the board today is a recommendation that the board adopt an amendment to Rule 4003 and publish for public comment certain related proposals concerning the inspections of non-U.S. firms. I will now turn to the Director of our Office of International Affairs, Rhonda Schneer, and our Deputy General Counsel, Michael Stevenson, to present this recommendation. Rhonda and Michael.
Thank you, Chairman Olson. As you mentioned today, the staff are presenting recommendations concerning the inspection deadlines of certain non-U.S. firms, as well as a request for comment on certain proposed transparency measures and actions that the board might take in the event of non-cooperation by a registered firm. I'm going to begin by discussing the recommendations to defer the inspections of certain non-U.S. firms with deadlines in 2008 and 2009, and then turn the floor over to my colleague from the Office of General Counsel, Michael Stevenson, to discuss the technical rule amendments, the proposed transparency measures, and the possible actions in the event of non-cooperation by a firm on which the board is seeking comment. By way of background, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act charges the PCAOB with the oversight of public accounting firms that provide audit services to U.S. public companies, regardless of where the firms are domiciled. As of today, the board has completed over 900 inspections, including 123 inspections of non-U.S. firms located in 24 countries. The board's experience has shown, however, that inspections of non-U.S. firms raise special issues, such as potential legal obstacles or sovereignty concerns of some jurisdictions. In order to overcome such obstacles, the PCAOB has sought, where possible, to coordinate and cooperate with local oversight entities that also have regulatory authority over PCAOB-registered non-U.S. firms. Since the PCAOB was created, jurisdictions in many other parts of the world have developed their own auditor oversight systems or enhanced existing oversight systems. The PCAOB has established relationships with many, if not most, of these jurisdictions. By the end of 2008, two more jurisdictions will be added so that the PCAOB will have conducted inspections in 26 different countries. In six of these jurisdictions, the inspections will have been conducted jointly with local oversight authorities. The staff believes that both we and our colleagues in Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, Korea, Singapore, and most recently Norway benefit from these arrangements, and we thank them for their cooperation. Establishing the necessary cooperative arrangements to conduct joint inspections, however, can take substantial time and effort. The effort typically involves negotiating the principles of an arrangement for cooperation consistent with the inspection obligation that the Act imposes on the board. It also involves the board gaining a detailed understanding of the other jurisdiction's auditor oversight system in order for the board to determine the degree of reliance it is willing to place on inspection work performed under that system in a particular inspection year. If the inspection work is going to be done jointly with a non-U.S. auditor oversight entity, additional effort is involved in coordinating the schedule of specific inspections. Several of the non-U.S. audit oversight entities proceed according to inspection frequency requirements, which differ from the PCAOB's. Let me turn now to the situation with regard to a small number of firms with a 2008 deadline. In 2008, the board encountered for the first time obstacles that could not be resolved in enough time to conduct the inspections of 21 firms in 9 countries by the end of calendar year 2008 as required by Rule 4003. While the board has engaged in dialogue with the relevant authorities in each of the jurisdictions, the necessary cooperative arrangements could not be finalized in 7 jurisdictions in time to conduct inspections by the end of 2008. In some cases, this was due to the fact that the regulator had just recently started their own inspections programs. In other jurisdictions, local authorities have raised sovereignty concerns or potential legal conflicts, and efforts to resolve those issues are incomplete. In 2 of the jurisdictions, the PCAOB will have been able to conduct some, but not all of the required inspections due to conflicts between the inspection schedules of the PCOB and the Home Country Oversight Authority. While the board could make inspection demands directly on the firms located in these jurisdictions right away, without first establishing cooperative relationships, the staff believes that the purposes of the Act, the public interest, and the protection of investors are better served by delaying a first inspection to continue to work toward a cooperative resolution, rather than by precipitating legal disputes involving conflicts between U.S. and non-U.S. laws that could arise if the board sought to enforce compliance with its preferred schedule without regard to the concerns of the non-U.S. oversight authorities. The staff therefore recommends that the board amend Rule 4003 to permit the board to postpone the deadlines for inspecting these firms for 1 year. However, while the staff is recommending an extension of the deadline to permit the board to continue to work towards cooperation with authorities in those 9 jurisdictions, the staff does not recommend that the board do so indefinitely or that the board make any further adjustment to the inspection requirement for firms with a 2008 deadline. Although the staff recognizes that some non-U.S. firms may be reluctant to comply with PCOB inspection demands because of a concern that doing so might violate local law, staff recommends that the board make inspection demands on the firms early enough to allow the board to conduct the inspections by the end of calendar year 2009. Looking ahead to firms with inspection deadlines in 2009, as opposed to these firms in 2008, the staff believes that the board will face a similar problem. Due to the operation of PCOB rules and the initial registration deadline for non-U.S. firms, more first inspections of non-U.S. firms become due by the end of 2009 than in any other year. In addition to the 21 firms with 2008 deadlines that will have to be conducted in 2009, there are 70 non-U.S. firms due for first inspections by the end of 2009. This is in addition to 16 second inspections of non-U.S. firms that are also due by the end of 2009. Of the 70 non-U.S. firms due, 50 are in 24 new countries where the PCOB will not have conducted any inspections by the end of 2008, and where the PCOB would seek first to establish cooperative relationships with the local authorities. Many of the 24 new jurisdictions are currently establishing or just beginning to operate audit oversight authorities. In light of the effort and time required to put in place cooperative arrangements and to evaluate for purposes of PCOB Rule 4012 newly established oversight systems, the staff has concerns about proceeding as if that work can be completed in all of the new jurisdictions in time to conduct all of the required inspections by the end of 2009. Staff believes that additional time may be necessary to conduct at least some of the 50 first inspections due in these new jurisdictions in 2009. Thus, taking into account the need to satisfy the Act's inspection requirements, as well as the potential difficulties faced by the Board if it proceeds without first establishing cooperative relationships, the staff recommends that the Board seek public comment on a proposed amendment to Rule 4003, which would allow the Board to defer for up to 3 years the first inspection of any non-U.S. firm that the Board is currently required to conduct by the end of 2009, and that is in a jurisdiction where the Board has not conducted an inspection before 2009. Staff believes that such an amendment would allow the board appropriate time to reasonably pursue cooperative arrangements with jurisdictions in which the board may otherwise face substantial obstacles to completing its inspections program. Let me clarify a few points about the recommended proposed amendment. First, the extension would apply to only a narrow universe of firms. It would permit delaying only the first inspections of firms with a current 2009 inspection deadline, and only if those firms are in jurisdictions where the PCOB has not previously conducted inspections. This would not apply to any second inspections, to any firms with current deadlines other than in 2009, or to firms in countries where the PCOB has previously conducted inspections. Moreover, I should stress that under the proposed amendment, the board would not delay the inspections of all 50 of the firms eligible for the extension, and the proposed rule would also not entitle any firm to an extension of time. Rather, the proposed amendment would give the board discretion to defer for up to 3 years deadlines for some of the relevant inspections. Thus, the recommended proposed amendment should not be understood as a reprieve that allows all the affected firms to view 2012 as their deadline for PCOB inspections. Rather, the staff recommends that the board set a schedule now for inspections for the period 2009-2012 for the 50 affected firms. and considering how to allocate the inspections over that period of time without unduly delaying inspections of firms whose audit work has the broadest impact on U.S. investors. The staff recommends that the board look to the total U.S. market capitalization of the firm's issuer audit clients as a reasonable and perhaps the most readily measurable indicator of the impact of a firm's audit work on U.S. investors. In determining such a schedule, the staff recommends that the board sequence the 50 inspections such that certain minimum thresholds related to market capitalization be satisfied in each of the years from 2009 to 2012. The staff recommends that the board begin by ranking the 50 firms according to their total U.S. market cap of the firm's issuer audit clients. Working from the top of the list of the highest U.S. market cap down, the board would distribute the inspection of the 50 firms over the period 2009 to 2012 in order to meet certain criteria. These criteria would include that by the end of 2009, the board would inspect firms whose combined market cap of their issuer clients constitute at least 35% of the aggregate U.S. market cap of the audit clients of all the 50 firms. By the end of 2010, the staff recommends that the board would inspect firms whose combined audit client U.S. market cap constitutes at least 90% of that aggregate. By the end of 2011, the board would have inspected firms whose combined U.S. market cap constitutes at least 99.9% of the aggregate. And finally, by the end of the third year of the extension, the board would inspect the remaining firms whose market cap constitutes 0.1%. Along with meeting these market capitalization thresholds, the staff recommends that the board also satisfy certain criteria concerning the number of those 50 firms that would be inspected in each year. Specifically, the staff recommends that the board conduct at least 4 of the 50 inspections in 2009, at least 11 in 2010, and at least 14 more in 2011. This is because the bulk of the market cap resides in a small number of firms. It is important to note that the staff's recommendation with regard to scheduling would not prevent an inspection from occurring earlier than called for by this schedule. Any inspection could be moved to an earlier year for a variety of reasons, such as the presence of risk factors in a particular audit engagement, synchronization of schedules with a local regulator for purposes of a joint inspection, or simply the opportunity to do an inspection earlier and the availability of resources to do so. In addition, the staff recommends that the board review updated market capitalization data on at least an annual basis and consider whether there have been any changes that warrant moving a particular inspection forward to an earlier year due to a change in the market cap of the firm's issuer audit clients. The staff believes that extending the deadline in this way for the limited subset of firms, using the criteria for scheduling that I've just described, would provide the appropriate time for the board to pursue cooperative arrangements with its non-U.S. counterparts while not unduly delaying inspections of firms with the broadest potential impact on U.S. investors. Indeed, the board has already established good working relationships with audit oversight authorities in the home jurisdictions of the firms whose audit issuer clients have the highest total market capitalization. Allowing a short delay of the first inspections of firms further down the list will provide the board with the necessary time to attempt to establish similar relationships with the remaining jurisdictions. I will now give the floor to my colleague Michael Stevenson to discuss the technical rule amendments and the request for comment on certain proposed transparency measures and the possible actions the board could take in the event of non-cooperation by a firm. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. I want to follow up on Rhonda's discussion by getting into the mechanics of what we're recommending that the board do today. And I'd like to begin with some brief background that's relevant to those mechanics. The Sarbanes-Oxley Act provides that the board must inspect at least once every 3 years each registered firm that regularly provides audit reports for 100 or fewer issuers. The Act also allows the board to adjust that schedule if the board finds that a different schedule is consistent with the purposes of the Act, the public interest, and the protection of investors. In addition, the board can only adjust that schedule by adopting a rule. And that means that the schedule adjustment also requires the approval of the SEC. The board initially adopted an inspection frequency rule, Rule 4003, that the SEC approved in 2004. The board has since adopted one schedule adjusting amendment to that rule, which the SEC approved in 2007. That adjustment applied to inspections of all firms, U.S. and non-U.S., that registered in 2003 and 2004. and it essentially provided for a one-year extension of the three-year requirement, which the board could apply one time to either a firm's first inspection or its second inspection, but not to both. And the purpose of that adjustment was just to facilitate the board's ability to allocate its inspection resources evenly from year to year and eliminate year-to-year fluctuations that would have resulted from being bound to repeating the same pattern of inspections as in the board's startup phase. For purposes of the discussion this morning, the relevant aspect of the board's current inspection frequency rule is this. If a firm issues an audit report for an issuer after registering with the PCAOB, the board must conduct the first inspection of that firm no later than the fourth calendar year following the year of the audit report, unless the firm registered after 2004, in which case the deadline is the third calendar year. What the staff is recommending this morning is that the board adopt an amendment that would effectively extend by 1 year the current 2008 deadline for 21 inspections of nine U.S. firms, and that the board propose for comment a separate amendment that would effectively extend the current 2009 deadline for 46 inspections of nine U.S. firms. The staff is recommending that, the board, with respect to the 2008 deadline, the staff is recommending that the board amend Rule 4003 by adding a new paragraph F that would extend that deadline. Inherent in that recommendation is a recommendation that the board find that that limited schedule adjustment is consistent with the purposes of the Act, the public interest, and the protection of investors, and in this case, that finding would be supported by reasoning that Rhonda has described. For reasons that Rhonda has also described, the staff is recommending that the board propose for public comment a new paragraph G for Rule 4003 that would apply with respect to the 2009 deadline. Proposed paragraph G would apply only to those 50 inspections that Rhonda discussed and would allow the board to conduct a portion of those inspections in each of the years from 2009 to 2012, sequenced and scheduled according to the criteria that the board would publicly announce, which Rhonda has also discussed. In addition, under the proposal relating to the 2009 amendment, the proposed paragraph G, the board would, no later than January of each year, from 2009 to 2012, and after providing advance notice to the authorities in the relevant jurisdictions, publicly announce all of the non-U.S. jurisdictions in which there are firms whose inspection the board will conduct in that year. This would not be limited to the jurisdictions relevant to the 50 inspections we've been discussing, but would include all non-U.S. jurisdictions in which the board planned to conduct any inspection that year. Once that announcement was made, the board would conduct inspections that year in each of those jurisdictions, unless the board made a subsequent public announcement explaining why that had changed with respect to a particular jurisdiction. Even apart from whether the board eventually adopts paragraph G, staff is also recommending that the board publish such an announcement regarding 2009 in January of 2009. That is, the staff recommends that in January 2009, the board announce the jurisdictions in which it plans to conduct inspections in 2009. That announcement would not, however, limit the board from adding inspections in other jurisdictions during that year. Because the staff is only recommending that the board propose this 2009 deadline adjustment, it's not necessary at this stage for the board to make a finding that proposed paragraph G would be consistent with the purposes of the Act, public interest, and the protection of investors. The staff recommends that the board consider that question in light of comments that the board may receive on the proposal, but in general we suggest that the same considerations that would support this finding with respect to the extension of the 2008 deadline would also support it with respect to proposed paragraph G concerning the 2009 deadline. I'd like to turn from the proposed rules to some other matters that the staff is recommending that the board seek public comment on. The first has to do with a possible practice of the board maintaining an up-to-date public list of registered firms that the board has not inspected, even though the firms have issued audit reports while registered, and the deadline for the board to conduct the first inspection of the firms under the currently effective frequency rule has passed. The thought behind this suggestion is that under the Act and existing board rules, the public and investors have an expectation about the time by which such a firm will have been inspected by the board, and that there may be value in providing public transparency where that inspection has not occurred by that time. It's important to understand that the practice described in the recommended release would not involve faulting the firm or suggesting that the firm has failed to cooperate or otherwise done anything wrong. The practice would simply be to advise the public when, for whatever reason, a firm has not been inspected, even though more than 4 years have passed since the end of the calendar year in which the firm first issued an audit report while registered. We suggest that the board seek public comment on the pros and cons of such a practice. Second, the release that the staff recommends you issue includes a discussion of the obligation of all registered firms to cooperate with PCAOB inspections. That obligation is rooted in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and board rules, specifically Rule 4006. As discussed in the release, if the board makes inspection demands on firms in jurisdictions where cooperative arrangements have not been reached with local authorities, it is conceivable that a firm might take the position that it cannot comply with the PCAOB inspection demand for certain information because local law prohibits the firm from supplying that information. The release discusses the tension between that potential circumstance and the requirements of U.S. law. The release notes that firms choose to be registered with the board in order to engage in professional activity directly related to and affecting U.S. financial markets, and accordingly they become subject to the requirements of U.S. law. The release also notes that in considering whether to impose disciplinary sanctions in any case of non-cooperation with an inspection, the board must be sensitive to the legislative premise reflected in the Act, that cooperation with an inspection is a condition of a firm's continuing registration. The release also acknowledges, however, that non-U.S. legal restrictions and sovereignty concerns present considerations not present in other non-cooperation circumstances. The staff recommends that the board invite public comment generally on whether and how the fact of a non-U.S. legal restriction or sovereignty concern should be factored into the board's consideration of the appropriate sanction to impose for failing to cooperate with an inspection. Finally, and also related to the possibility of firms declining to cooperate because of local legal restrictions, the staff recommends that the board seek comment on the concept of a type of disclosure rule. Specifically, the release describes the outline of a rule that would require any auditor that issues an audit report to make certain disclosures in connection with that report, including whether that auditor has failed to provide information in response to a PCAOB inspection demand on the basis of non-U.S. legal restrictions or sovereignty concerns, and whether, in the auditor used the work of any other registered firm that has declined to provide information or documents in response to an inspection demand on that basis. As outlined in the release, if the auditor had used the work of such a registered firm, the disclosure rule could also require the auditor to disclose additional information, including such things as the identity of the other firm, the nature of the work performed by the other firm, any steps the principal auditor took to assure itself concerning the other firm's familiarity with relevant professional standards and ability to perform the work, any other procedures on which the principal auditor relies or to monitor or assess the other firm's performance of audit procedures, and a brief summary of any information available to the principal auditor about deficiencies in the other firm's performance of any such procedures in the two-year period preceding the date of the audit report. I want to emphasize that the staff is not now recommending that the board propose for comment a specific rule along these lines. Rather, the staff is recommending that the board seek comment on the concept of such a rule, with the understanding that we would not actually recommend that the board adopt any such rule without first proposing a more specific version for public comment. And with that, we'd be happy to address any questions you have.
Thank you, Rhonda and Michael. Are there any motions regarding this matter?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion.
And Mr. Galzer.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board adopt Rule 4003F, as recommended by the staff, instruct the staff to submit the rule to the Securities and Exchange Commission for approval pursuant to Section 107 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, and further that the board publish proposed Rule 4003G and seek public comment on that rule proposal and on the related issues described in the release accompanying the rule for a period of 60 days.
Is there a second?
Second, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dan and Bill. A motion has been made and seconded, so the question before the board is whether it will approve the motion and adopt the rule amendment and release for public comment the other proposals on the inspections of non-U.S. firms. Rhonda and Michael have provided a good overview of the package before the board today. Specifically, their recommendation is for the board to adopt an amendment to the inspection frequency requirements of Rule 4003 that will give the board the ability to postpone for up to 1 year certain inspections of foreign registered public accounting firms that the board is otherwise required to conduct before the end of 2008. The board also is seeking comment on a proposed second amendment to Rule 4003 that would give the board the ability to postpone for up to 3 years certain inspections of foreign registered public accounting firms that the board is otherwise required to conduct before the end of 2009. In addition, the board is seeking public comment on other actions the board could take to address circumstances where the PCAOB is delayed in completing or not able to complete inspections of non-U.S. firms. It is important that audit firms, regulators, investors, and issuers have a clear understanding of the board's actions to date. To assist, I'll briefly discuss the overall objectives of what these rules and proposed measures are meant to achieve and address concerns that may arise. I will first address the final rule and proposed rule that would defer for a limited time period some inspections currently due for inspection in 2008 or 2009. I will address three areas where the board's objectives may warrant an explanation. First and foremost, today's action is not a broad measure to delay PCAOB inspections. Let me be clear. Today's amendments would affect only a subset of first-time inspections. Beyond this subset, it would not affect inspection requirements concerning any other first inspections or any second or later inspections of non-U.S. firms. The need to delay certain first-time inspections is a result of the PCAOB's preferred and practical approach to undertaking inspections outside the United States. The approach appropriately emphasizes the need to coordinate and cooperate with local authorities. Accordingly, the board adopted a framework in 2004, setting forth how it would work cooperatively with its counterparts to the extent possible. I support this approach and continue to believe that it is in the long-term best interests of investors. The approach recognizes that a non-U.S. firm's local laws can present issues. Thus, the board seeks to work with its counterparts in an effort to resolve potential conflicts of law. The board has had success in this area, but such discussions can be challenging and time-consuming. At the same time, the board is required by the Sarbanes-Oxley Act to conduct inspections of registered firms, including non-U.S. firms, and our efforts today reflect our commitment to meet that mandate. Second, the board's action today reflects the need and advantage of allowing appropriate time for the PCAOB to work cooperatively with foreign regulators and is not a negative reflection on our efforts or those of our foreign counterparts. While not without challenges, I would say that our overall approach to non-U.S. inspections continues to be successful. To date, as Rhonda indicated, the PCAOB has conducted 123 inspections of non-U.S. registered firms located in approximately 24 jurisdictions. We have undertaken joint inspections with our counterparts where possible and performed PCAOB-only inspections where counterparts did not yet exist. The program continues to grow, as do our relationships with foreign audit oversight bodies. Forging productive relationships with home country audit regulators and coordinating non-U.S. inspections continues to be guiding principles for our inspection program. In fact, I've directed staff to reach out immediately to regulators in countries where firms could be affected by a deferral in order to coordinate the required inspections and synchronize inspection schedules to the extent possible. Third, these two rules should in no way be viewed as a resource allocation issue. While we will continue to expand our resources in this area, inspections have not been forestalled due to a staffing or other resource constraint. We can meet our inspection goals with our current and projected resources. The board also is seeking comment on whether it should publish the identity of firms that have not been inspected by the PCAOB within the time frame that investors could reasonably have inspected. I am particularly interested in comments on this possible action so that the board can fully appreciate the benefits that it might offer investors, as well as any unanticipated impact it could have on issuers or audit firms. Even providing for these one-time deferrals of 2008 and 2009 inspection deadlines, it is possible that some registered firms may express reservation with a required PCAOB inspection because of a concern that doing so might violate some aspect of their local law. Nonetheless, firms have been registered with the PCAOB. Nonetheless, firms that have registered with the PCAOB need to be aware of the board's statutory obligation and authority to conduct these inspections, and of the firm's obligation under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and PCAOB rules to cooperate in the inspections. In instance where a firm refuses to comply with or unduly delays complying with the board's request for information, the board can impose various disciplinary and remedial sanctions, which Michael Stevenson has just outlined. Because a refusal to provide information based on non-U.S. legal restrictions involves unique circumstances, staff recommends that the board today seek public comment on how a conflict of law should be factored into the board's consideration of the appropriate sanction for the PCAOB to impose. I encourage careful consideration of this topic by commenters. I hope that it draws a wide range of comments as it involves a number of complex issues. Some will ask how today's action corresponds to the statement on full reliance proposed by the board last December. The answer is simple. They do not conflict. Today we are considering actions involving a discrete area of the PCAOB's non-U.S. inspection program. The full reliance proposal, where the PCAOB set forth proposed criteria on which it could consider relying to the fullest extent possible on the inspection work of a non-U.S. counterpart, is a separate initiative. The board continues to carefully consider the comments received on that proposal, including those received during its June roundtable on the subject, which communicated a wide array of views. I hope that we can be in a position to move forward toward a final statement early next year. The PCAOB is motivated to engage with its fellow audit regulators, and it will continue to do so. More than 880 non-U.S. firms are registered with the PCAOB, and currently about 250 of these firms are subject to a PCAOB inspection on a triennial basis. Since the creation of the PCAOB, we have reached out to regulators and governments in other countries to develop relationships with our counterparts in connection with those inspections. Building relationships with our counterparts, while not void of challenges, has worked well, and the PCAOB remains fully committed to working closely with our counterparts. The PCAOB is equally motivated to meet its statutory inspection mandate, and for this reason it is considering the recommendation before the board today. Before I conclude, I would like to thank Michael Stevenson, Rhonda Schneer, and Carl Callender, and their colleagues in the Office of General Counsel, Office of International Affairs, and the Division of Registration and Inspections for their careful and creative thinking through a series of challenging issues in order to bring this package before the board today. There were a number of complex issues and spirited opinions for staff to consider and address before reaching today's meetings, and I thank the staff for working through these issues in such a professional manner. Thank you, Rhonda, thank you, Michael, and thank you, Carl. I will now turn to my fellow board members for any discussion. And we can move left to right today. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a statement also, and I'd like to ask the staff some questions to bring out some other points. The rules before the board today present one of the more difficult policy decisions we've faced in the nearly 6 years that the board has been operating. I support adopting the one-year deferral of certain 2008 inspections and proposing for comment the three-year deferral of certain 2009 inspections. However, the road to that conclusion to support these recommendations has not been an easy one for me. Section 104 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act directs the board to inspect every registered firm that regularly provides audit reports on 100 or fewer SEC-registered companies once every 3 years. Section 106 makes clear that non-U.S. firms should be treated the same as U.S. firms in this respect and in other respects. By rule, the board has provided that the first inspection of a firm that registered in 2003 or 2004 need not occur for 4 years. Another rule provides that the 4 years doesn't begin to run until the year after the year in which a firm audit report is filed with the SEC. Under this regime, the latest year in which many non-U.S. firms that registered in 2004 must have their first inspections is 2009. Proposed Rule 4003G would extend that deadline from 2009 to 2012 for 50 firms in countries where we've not yet conducted an inspection. While the board has successfully inspected 123 non-U.S. firms in 24 countries, there are practical limits on our ability to rapidly increase the number of countries in which we perform inspections. Overseas inspections generally must be preceded by time-consuming discussions with the home country regulator. In addition, foreign inspections sometimes require the resolution of thorny issues under non-U.S. privacy and other laws. These factors, along with the desire to work cooperatively with our non-U.S. counterparts and to be respectful of the sovereignty of other nations, have understandably slowed the first cycle of foreign inspections. Nevertheless, I've been reluctant to support any proposal like Rule 4003G that could have the effect of delaying until 2012 the first inspection of firms that registered with the board in 2004 and have issued one and perhaps more than one audit reports that are filed with the SEC. The board was created to further the interest of U.S. investors in informative, accurate, and independent audit reports on the financial statements of companies that have SEC-registered securities. Lengthy deferrals of first inspections of non-U.S. firms seem to me to undermine what Congress sought to accomplish in creating the board and directing it to perform inspections according to a regular cycle. Despite these reservations, I've become persuaded that the three-year deferral in proposed Rule 4003G strikes an acceptable balance between the practical difficulties of laying the groundwork for inspections in multiple jurisdictions and the board's statutory mandate. I base that conclusion on four elements of the release we're considering today. First, the scheduling of the 50 deferred inspections would take the protection of U.S. investors into account. In 2009, the board would commit to inspecting at least four firms that together audit over 35% of the total market capitalization of all of the deferred firms. Market capitalization, while not a perfect measure, is relevant to the potential impact of these firms on U.S. investors. By the end of 2010, the percentage of deferred firm market cap audited that will have been inspected would climb to 90%. Second, in order to make the board's foreign inspection plans clear, we will publish at the beginning of each year a list of the countries in which inspections will be performed. Countries will not be deleted from that list without a public explanation. Third, the proposed 2009 deferral is accompanied by a proposal to publish a list naming every firm that has not been inspected despite the passage of 4 years since an audit report prepared by that firm was filed with the SEC. This list would afford investors transparency concerning cases in which they may be relying on audit reports of firms that have not been inspected according to the board's normal schedule. Fourth, The release invites comments on steps the board might take by rule when non-U.S. firms decline to cooperate in a board inspection. These include disclosure to investors in the firm's audit reports of the absence of an inspection, and similar disclosure in audit reports of other firms that use the non-inspected firm's work in their audits. Of course, the board would also consider taking enforcement action against non-cooperating foreign firms. Linking the proposed deferral with these measures is intended to address the interests of investors in U.S. securities, and I hope investors will comment on that approach. I recognize, however, that non-U.S. firms and regulators may be less than enthusiastic. My support of the release is not intended to suggest that I've lost interest in cooperating with other audit oversight bodies. On the contrary, I believe that in the long run, we will only be able to fully accomplish our mission if we work jointly and cooperatively with our counterparts. I view the proposed release as consistent with both that goal and with our obligation to conduct the statutorily required first inspections of audit firms based outside the United States. I want to conclude by noting that this release has not had an easy birth. Carl Callender, Rhonda Schneer, and Michael Stevenson have devoted much time, effort, and thought to the project. As the draftsman, Michael, in particular, has had to tolerate an even higher than usual number of board-level editors and critics, which he's done with his usual professionalism. I want to thank all three of you for your dedication and hard work. With that, there are several things I wanted to ask that I thought might just help to explain to people what we're doing here and bring out some points. First, I think it's already been explained that Rule 4003F, the one we're simply directly adopting today and sending to the SEC, would delay 21 inspections that are otherwise required or required under the existing rules to be conducted in 2008. Today is the 4th of December, so it seems unlikely that we could actually conduct those 21 inspections this year, regardless of what we do with our rules. It also, I won't say it seems unlikely, but perhaps there's a question as to whether the SEC is actually going to act on this rule before New Year's Eve comes around. What happens if they don't?
The short answer is the rule, any rule amendment doesn't take effect unless the SEC approves it. The particular rule amendment here, the way it's set up and worded, once it's effective, what it says is that the deadline for these inspections is 2009, not 2008. And as discussed, the plan is to conduct those inspections in 2009.
I guess obviously once we adopt the rule, then we're going to operate, we really have no choice but to operate as if it's controls our inspection schedule. There's not much more we can do in 2008 for these 21 inspections.
I think, as Rhonda has described, I think that's the case with respect to those inspections.
Well, maybe a related question then is the impact on the budget. I mean, the chairman made the point that these proposals aren't really driven by resource concerns, but the effect here is to move into 2009 21 inspections that would otherwise have had to have been conducted this year, and then to move out of 2009 some number of inspections, and potentially 50, although I guess not in practice actually that many, into later years. A week ago, we sat here and submitted a budget to the SEC. Was that based on these rules, or does that reflect these assumption that these rules would be adopted, or if it doesn't, how will the budget change?
The 2009 budget does not take into account the proposed rule changes being discussed today. Assuming the deferral proposals are adopted, we expect no changes to 2009 spending on inspections, since the resources available would be allocated to foreign firms that perform referral work associated with subsidiaries of U.S. companies and to the domestic large firm program. The inspections division would also have the option under this proposal to bring forward into 2009 the inspections of other non-U.S. report issuing firms that are not required until later years.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I understand what you said. The budget we've sent to the SEC and that they're considering now had in it resources, or was premised on the idea that we would actually inspect in 2009 all 50 of the firms that we're now deferring or could potentially be deferred to later years. But there's still plenty of work to do in the foreign inspection area, and so those resources, to the extent there are resources saved from the deferral, will simply be devoted into other areas of foreign inspection, like, for example, the referral work with foreign firms.
That would be one area where the resources would be reallocated, yes.
And let me ask you just touch briefly on something else that the chairman also commented on in his statement. I think there is a potential for people to wonder if there's some connection between these deferral rules and our full reliance proposal that we published earlier in the year and then had a roundtable on in June. I guess I'll ask the question this way. Are these deferral proposals meant to support or make it more likely that these first inspections, when they do occur, can be conducted as full reliance inspections?
Dan, as Chairman Olson mentioned, the proposals today, they don't conflict, they're not in conflict with the proposed policy statement, but they're not actually related to the proposed policy statement as well. And in fact, what these proposals are trying to do is to allow the board a reasonable amount of time in order to pursue cooperative arrangements. But since the board hasn't adopted the full reliance policy statement yet, this would be cooperative arrangements as we've been conducting in the past under Rule 4012 for joint inspections.
As I understand the other statement, you all can correct me if I'm wrong, it's unlikely, I guess impossible, that the first inspection in a country would be done as a full reliance inspection.
And that's true. Under the policy statement, it said that the board had proposed that joint inspections would be a prerequisite before moving to full reliance, even under that statement.
Like I said, I'm just trying to underscore the point that the two are
right. Not
connected.
Yeah.
You talked in your comments about the approach we would take to selecting when the deferred firms would actually be inspected. As I understand it, that approach, which looks at the market, at least begins with the market cap that the firm has audited, wouldn't be in the rule. It's simply a statement. I mean, is that correct? And what's the thinking of having that scheme be outside the text of the rule?
That is correct. I think, as a general matter, I think we try not to recommend that the board put more into rules than is really necessary. In this case, there's a statutory overlay that the board wants to change the inspection schedule, by which I think we mean talking about the deadlines for inspections of these firms. That needs to be done by a rule. But some of the other details around how the board will actually sequence those inspections, as Rhonda described, doesn't need to be done by rule. There's no reason that we've identified that we would suggest putting in, enshrining those in a rule. Although, as we've discussed, if there are the rule would say that the sequencing will be done according to criteria that the board publicly announces. So, and that criteria was described by Rhonda, is described in the release, And if that were to change, the board would, at a minimum, need to have some public discussion of that.
I guess as probably everyone who's spoken already has noted, the approach is driven by or begins with market cap. How would we determine the market cap of the clients that a foreign firm is? And I guess we're talking here about the U.S. market cap, not the worldwide.
Right, and we have an existing process, annual process, relating to the board's accounting support fee. As you know, the board is funded by an accounting support fee that's paid by issuers, and that the share of that fee paid by each issuer is determined according to market cap data that we gather, represents an average monthly market cap, U.S. market cap, for the issuer over a 12-month period, and we'd be using that information.
So we'll simply use the numbers that are already determined for purposes of the issuer fee calculation. We won't be performing some new analysis of those.
That's right.
From client market cap.
That's right.
And would that be revisited, recalculated from time to time? Or?
Well, what's described in the release is that we set the initial sequencing of all 50 inspections according to the most recent market cap data that we've used for those fee purposes that we have right now, and that the board wouldn't change that sequencing to move firms further down in the list just because of changes in the market cap, at least not without publicly announcing that that's happened. We would revisit market cap at least annually, along with monitoring other criteria that Rhonda discussed and that are described in the release, to see if there's anything that suggests a reason to bring a particular firm up earlier in the schedule. But the initial sequencing would be set by today's market cap data.
So a firm could move up based on things like its referral work, its substantial role work, or perhaps some reason we have to believe that there's some risk associated with it, so that we hadn't already perceived, but they won't move down. They won't move backwards.
They wouldn't move backwards without a board publicly describing and explaining that fact.
And I think you, Rhonda, mentioned the fact that we'll cover 35% of the market cap of deferred firms in 2009. In other words, those firms won't actually be deferred, or firms representing 35% of the total market cap of the deferral. And how many firms is that?
Well, to reach that threshold, it's actually a small number of firms because a high amount of market cap is concentrated in a small number of firms. So the board would only have to inspect two firms to actually reach that threshold. Right now the staff is planning to inspect four of the firms with 2009 deadlines, in addition to 72 other non-U.S. firms that would be inspected in 2009.
Well, I did want to make that point. I mean, we're talking here about a relatively, in absolute terms, a small number of deferrable firms that would be inspected in 2009, but that's just a small picture of our total foreign inspection program, which would be looking at, you said, 70 firms?
Altogether, there will be 76 firms next year in 27 different countries that are on the schedule, and so four of those would be firms that originally had 2009 deadlines. But it would only take two of them to actually meet the 35% threshold.
Let me turn to some of these transparency points that I touched on in my statement. And I think you comment on this, Michael, but maybe it's worth emphasizing, this country list that we would publish at the beginning of each year, that's not directly related to the deferral. In other words, it would be all countries in which we plan to inspect, not just those which we plan to conduct inspections that are affected by Rule 4003G. Is that correct?
That's right. As Rhonda just described, 27 countries is the current plan for 2009. So what would be announced in January of 2009 is those 27 countries.
And what would happen if events transpired during the year that caused us to decide to conduct inspections in some country or countries that weren't on the list?
Well, the board can do that. There's nothing, we're not, nothing described in this release or the proposed rule that would preclude the board from doing that.
And would the list change?
I think that specific question isn't addressed in the release, and I think that remains to be determined by the board. I think there's nothing that would stop the board from adding that fact to the list.
Maybe the opposite situation is of more interest. What if we decided not to inspect in a country that had been named on the...
And the release does address that. If, for whatever reason, no inspections were going to be performed in a country that the board had initially announced that it would perform inspections in that year, there would... The release says that the board would publicly announce that change and describe reasons for that change.
And that's sort of the point I wanted to bring out, and at least I see that as a tool for you, Rhonda, so that when we're talking to other regulators, you'll be able to say that the board has made a fixed determination as to what we have to cover this year in order to meet our responsibilities, and that, well, you can't honestly say it's impossible to change it. It's, from our perspective, very difficult and unlikely to change, and our counterparts should understand that as you're working with them. There's also been some discussion about this list of firms that haven't been inspected within sort of the basic, or haven't had a first inspection within the sort of basic four-year cycle laid out in the rules. If we... And we'll solicit comment on that again, as the chairman indicated. But if we were to publish that list on January 1st, 2009, how many firms would be on it?
It would be the 21 firms that Rhonda described as being deferred from the 2008.
And so then, if we were to publish it again on January 1st, 2010, presumably those firms would come off because we're required to select them in 2008, and the 50 2009 firms would come on minus those we actually inspect, which looks like it'll be in the range of at least two and perhaps somewhat more.
That's right.
Could a domestic firm be on that list?
Only in theory, and I say that because, I mean, it's not set up to be a list that by its terms is limited to non-U.S. firms, but the issues that Rhonda has described with non-U.S. firms are issues that are, you know, resulting in this proposal to change the deadlines as they apply to those. Sitting here today, I can't imagine the circumstances in which we would come to you with a similar deadline-changing recommendation for U.S. firms, and I also don't think there's any reason to expect that the board wouldn't meet those deadlines with respect to U.S. firms.
Well, I suppose it may be scant comfort to the foreign firms that might appear on such a list. At least in principle, it isn't a list that's aimed at them. It would include any firm, U.S. or foreign, but for some reason that inspection didn't occur. Although I guess your point is that we'd be unlikely to tolerate or to accept the kind of delays with respect to a domestic firm without bringing enforcement action, but for reasons of sovereignty and cooperation, we are accepting with respect to foreign firms.
Yes.
And just to conclude then, again, you described the comment we would be requesting on possible consequences where there is non-cooperation and therefore no inspection of a foreign firm. Part of that is to suggest the sanctions that we might impose in an enforcement action for non-cooperation. It's a little unusual to solicit comment on enforcement sanctions. I guess you can think of the U.S. sentencing guidelines as a kind of analogy, but I can't think of many others. So what's the point of soliciting comment about possible enforcement sanctions in cases that haven't arisen yet?
I think I would frame it a little differently than that. It's certainly not seeking comment on sanctions to impose in any particular case, and the release makes clear that, you know, the board will consider every particular case on its facts through non-public deliberations as required by the Act. But the point of the release is to, you know, sort of highlight this tension between the cooperation requirement and the board's authority to impose sanctions for non-cooperation. The statute's seeming presumption that firms that don't cooperate maybe shouldn't be registered, and the fact that there are non-U.S. laws that may, in some circumstances, conflict with that. And those are not easy questions to think through. I mean, I would say that as a purely legal matter, I don't know that it's that hard a question, but I don't think it's purely a legal matter, and there's a lot to think through, and I think it's just we're suggesting it's may be helpful to invite the public to provide us some thoughts on how to think through those issues.
And then just last, I mean, again, as you discussed, the release also raises the possibility that we might adopt rules so that, short of taking an enforcement action, if a foreign firm didn't cooperate and therefore we couldn't conduct an inspection, there might be some disclosure consequences that flowed automatically from that. Like, for example, if the firm is performing a role in an audit where another auditor is the principal auditor, then perhaps the principal auditor would have to disclose in its audit opinion the fact that it was using the work of a non-cooperating, non-inspected foreign firm. Well, I'll just make this a comment, and you can respond or not. It seems to me that whether we adopt rules on that subject or not, principal auditors might have some pause in using the audit work of a firm that has refused to cooperate in a PCAOB inspection, and similarly, perhaps the client's audit committee would want to, at minimum, ask some questions about that situation before continuing with the auditor. Certainly, rules that buttress that on our part might well be a desirable thing. But even apart from rules, I mean, I wonder if that wouldn't raise some issues both with principal auditors and with audit committees.
I think that may be right. I mean, I don't have anything particular to add to it, but that's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Kelly. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Well, first, I have to also thank the staff for all your effort in this regard and all your patience as well. There is no doubt that this has been a challenging rulemaking, not the least of which is that the board is in the uncomfortable position of having failed to meet its inspections mandate. It's important to consider the lessons we should learn from this experience, but it's also necessary to chart a new course for the future. Our paramount concern must be to protect the interest of investors in U.S. securities. I think the proposal before us today would provide a responsible foundation to do so. Let me address briefly the lessons our experience should teach, though. First, at a time when we should have been focusing on how to complete our inspections, we took a detour. 1 year ago, the board proposed a policy to place full reliance on other countries' local inspections if they met certain conditions. But that policy could never have helped the board complete the inspections that were necessary for this year or that will be necessary for the next few years. Even in the best of situations, our counterparts typically do not retain work papers we need for our inspections. Moreover, many jurisdictions, even those with large markets and complex accounting firms, have only a handful of inspectors. The future will tell us whether such limited resources will be adequate to address even their own needs, much less ours. Second, the approach the board has taken to put off non-U.S. inspections to allow other countries time to set up their own oversight bodies has resulted in cooperation. But in many jurisdictions, the time has been used to set up impediments. Firms, their clients, and others have a strong incentive to lobby for such roadblocks. Our approach needs to take into consideration a counterbalance for this incentive. Make no mistake, I have supported achieving our mandate through cooperation with local authorities as a way to avoid unnecessary conflicts. But avoidance of conflict cannot mean avoidance of inspection. The board's release includes a description of the ramifications of firms' failure to cooperate. Importantly, the release also states that non-U.S. legal restrictions and sovereignty concerns of local authorities are not a sufficient defense in a board's disciplinary hearing for failing to provide information requested in an inspection. Firms register voluntarily in order to audit the financial statements of U.S. public companies, and they may withdraw from registration if they do not believe they can comply with the conditions that attach to that registration. The Congress that passed the Sarbanes-Oxley Act was no doubt familiar with the types of legal conflict issues that might be raised to resist cooperation with an inspection, but the Act makes no exception for them. Our release asks for comment on actions that may be necessary and appropriate to protect investors, and I encourage the public to do so. As for the proposed deferrals, as I described, given the board's failure to plan for these inspections earlier, the need to put off the 21 uncompleted inspections required in 2008 has become a fait accompli. If inspections demand had been made earlier, some firms might have complied, despite the rhetoric from some corners that compliance would violate local law. In fairness, I think we should give firms an opportunity to comply, and thus we need to push those inspections to 2009. The proposal to spread the 50 inspections required by 2009 over a period of 4 years is just that, a proposal. It presents the board with an important trade-off to consider. That is, setting aside the problems we've encountered, commencing inspections, when we do conduct them, they must be meaningful and not mere compliance exercises. We still have much work to do to build our non-U.S. inspections program. I'd like to say we can complete all required inspections with the highest quality, but the reality is that deferring an inspection may allow us to do a better inspection in the end. Specifically, as I discussed last week at our open meeting on the budget, our inspections need to focus on the substantial risk that referred work on multinational audits present. Today, they don't take that into account adequately. In addition, many registered non-U.S. firms are members of global networks and rely on regional quality control functions. Our inspections division needs to develop a strategy to evaluate those quality control functions in the context of local non-U.S. inspections, which we've already begun to consider in past inspections. Closely related, our Office of Research and Analysis has had limited involvement in non-U.S. inspections to date. At home, the group provides substantial risk assessment materials to assist in planning individual inspections. I hope the additional time will also allow our Office of Research and Analysis to institute a practice of providing planning advice for non-U.S. inspections as well. Indeed, risk assessment is particularly important in these inspections, given that many of the firms are quite large, and yet our window into them is limited to a small number of audits. I welcome comment on the trade-off the proposed 2000 deferral presents. If the deferral would enhance inspection quality, I think it's worth considering. But it is by no means a clear solution. The risk associated with non-U.S. registered firms is significant for investors. Moreover, that risk is increased by the fact that non-U.S. firms are not subject to our interim standard requiring concurring partner reviews, which might have provided provisional investor protection pending an inspection. In February, we proposed a new concurring review standard that would apply to all registered firms. I hope that we will act on that standard soon, but it will not be in place for at least part of the deferral period. Thank you.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would join my colleagues in thanking the staff with a little more in the way of personal apology for making your jobs harder than they otherwise did. Sarbanes-Oxley envisioned the PCAOB protecting investors and U.S. issuers, whether domestic or foreign, as Charlie pointed out, through its inspections of the audits of public companies. For reasons beyond our control, inspections of non-U.S. firms have lagged behind inspections of registered firms located in the United States. It would be a mistake, however, for investors to assume that investing in U.S.-based issuers necessarily provides a higher degree of protection than investing in foreign private issuers whose audits have not yet been inspected. the proposal being considered by the board today wisely focuses on market cap as a measure of the relative risks to U.S. investors, but this focus should not obscure the risks to investors in U.S.-based public companies with substantial non-U.S. operations. The U.S. auditors of those companies rely on offshore audit work, work which has so far been largely untouched by the PCAOB's inspection process. I stress this to make the point and underscore the importance of the issues before the board today to those who invest in U.S.-based companies which have large non-U.S. activities, as well as those who invest in foreign private issuers whose primary activities are outside the United States. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Steve. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The choice the board faces this morning is clearly stated in the board's release. The board must decide either, one, to postpone certain inspections of foreign registered public accounting firms while continuing discussions in an attempt to resolve legal obstacles or sovereignty-based objections of local authorities to those inspections, or, two, to proceed with inspections by making inspection demands on individual firms despite those objections. In making its decision, the board has to balance some difficult considerations. As other board members have pointed out, Section 104(b)(1) of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act is very specific that all registered accounting firms are to be inspected every year if the firm issues audit reports for over 100 issuers, or at least once every 3 years if the firm issues less than that number. Section 104(b)(2) also provides for limited exceptions to this requirement, quote, if the board finds that different inspection schedules are consistent with the purpose of the act, the public interest, and the protection of investors. Thus, the question before the board this morning is whether the proposal we are considering is in fact consistent with the purpose of Sarbanes-Oxley, with the public interest, and with the protection of investors. This is a close call. And I look forward to exploring these issues in some depth in the questions I'd like to ask following the statement. What is not a close call to me is that part of the release seeking comment on what it disclosed on our website, a list of all registered firms yet to be inspected. Just as I believe that firms that have failed to adequately respond to our quality control criticisms within the statutorily required 12-month remediation period should be prominently and conspicuously disclosed on our website, so I also believe should this list of uninspected firms be similarly disclosed. Sunshine is the best disinfectant, and investors deserve this type of information in an easily accessible form on our website, as noticed that the firms involved have not been subject to the board's expected oversight. Finally, I know how much hard work Michael Stevenson, Rhonda Schneer, and Carl Callender have put into this release, and I would like to thank them for their efforts. And now, Mr. Chairman, I do have a number of questions which I kind of like to systematically go through. And it might take some time, but I apologize for that for being the last person.
There's no 10-minute rule like there was in the Senate, as you know.
Okay. As I mentioned, Section 104(b)(1). Of the Act specifically mandates inspections on an annual or triennial basis for all registered public accounting firms, unless different inspection schedules are consistent with the public interest and the protection of investors. Section 104(b)(2) provides limited exceptions, quote, if the board finds that different inspection schedules are consistent with the purpose of the Act, the public interest, and the protection of investors. I'd like to get a better understanding of why exactly would you say that this proposal is necessary or appropriate in the public interest or for the protection of investors?
Thank you, Steve. Well, first, let me emphasize again a couple of points about what's being proposed today. First is that staff is not recommending, at least let's focus on the 2009 firms, that all of those firms be given a 3-year extension of their inspection deadline. Rather, it's the staff's recommendation that 90% of the market cap, the aggregate market cap of the firms that would be extended, would be captured by the end of 2010, so that by the end of a 1-year extension, from 2009. Also, we should remember that the proposal relates to a small subset of all of the firms that the board has to inspect, the non-U.S. firms. So what we're talking about here is that the staff recommendation would permit the board a reasonable amount of additional time to attempt to establish cooperative relationships with these new jurisdictions, jurisdictions where the board has not previously conducted inspections, in order to avoid conflicts that might come up due to local law. And, we believe that this does better serve the public interest and the protection of investors rather than marching forward and ignoring the concerns of our non-U.S. counterparts and potentially ending up in non-cooperation proceedings with these firms, which doesn't result in them actually being inspected.
But isn't one of the sanctions deregistration?
That's true. The board could take that action through an enforcement proceeding to deregister the firm, and I think that's one of the things the board is considering is whether that's the only action that should be taken or whether there's other actions that might be taken in a situation of non-cooperation. That's what the board is seeking comment on.
And if I could just add to that, I think that point goes to a part of what Rhonda was saying earlier, that the alternative to trying to spend a little more time to work toward a cooperative arrangement is not simply to immediately either inspect or deregister the firm. To deregistration, a revocation of registration, is a sanction that the board could impose after disciplinary proceeding and all the process required by the Act, which itself wouldn't take effect unless and until the commission approved that sanction after all of that process, after which the firm would still have the option of appealing that decision to the federal courts. So it's not as simple a decision as just saying, the board one day saying, okay, you're no longer registered.
If a foreign firm doesn't agree to an inspection, presumably there'd be an enforcement action, but wouldn't that be a pretty clear-cut case with respect to deregistering if the board wanted to take that action?
If any firm declined to provide information requested by the board in an inspection, that would be a violation of Board Rule 4006. In that circumstance, the board could decide to commence disciplinary proceeding against the firm, and at the conclusion of that proceeding, the board could consider what, if any, sanctions to impose based on the facts and circumstances and the findings. One possible sanction would be revocation. Yes.
Now, would you discuss the events that led to the need to delay these inspections, and specifically, how did we find ourselves in the position to have to delay these 2008 inspections so late in the year?
Well, I think as what's been mentioned today, that these issues are very complicated. It was also unclear until the last few months how many of the non-U.S. firms with 2008 deadlines would not be inspected this year, so it was difficult for the staff to present a proposed concrete plan to the board until we knew that, and then given the internal debate that has occurred over the past few months has led us to December 4th.
And I am very sensitive to the internal debate and the angst that has caused the staff and a number of others. Is there any way that the board can expedite these inspections so they are completed before 2012? And if not, why not?
Well, of course, under the proposal that the staff is making today, the board could accelerate, once it fixes a schedule, assuming that the board decides to do that based on the market capitalization of the firm's audit, the board could always accelerate the inspection of any firm on that schedule into an earlier year. So for the variety of reasons that I discussed, whether there's a risk factor in a particular audit engagement that's been identified, or whether it makes sense from a resource standpoint, or whether it makes sense from the standpoint of doing a joint inspection with that home country regulator.
I think there's probably a general consensus to the extent that we could expedite, that would be beneficial, but I understand the constraints. The release states, quote, in its oversight of non-U.S. firm, the board seeks to the extent reasonably possible to coordinate and cooperate with local authorities. Why do you believe that the benefits of developing efficient and effective cooperative arrangements with our non-U.S. counterparts and conducting joint inspections outweighs the interest of the public and investors in getting these inspections done on a more timely basis?
Well, I think, again, as has been explained today, you know, cooperative arrangements and joint inspections have the benefit of helping us to avoid conflicts of laws that can delay the inspections or prevent the inspections. So it helps us actually get the inspection done, when otherwise the board could end up potentially spending most of its time, as Michael described, engaged in enforcement proceedings over non-cooperation by the firm. So I think on balance, it makes sense to allow what is a reasonable, you know, small additional amount of time for the staff to attempt to work out those cooperative arrangements. We're not suggesting that the board indefinitely wait, because that is a better solution than marching forward right now, which would most likely result in I think, situations where the firms would cite conflicts of law and not be able to provide or refuse to provide information.
And what are some specific examples of the legal obstacles or sovereignty concerns that particular jurisdictions have raised to cooperation with BCOB inspections?
Well, we typically, conflicts of law always comes up in our discussions with the non-U.S. authorities, and they usually involve things like personal data protection laws, bank secrecy law is another one, state secrets law is another one that's been raised. There are some countries that have laws on their books that prohibit accountants from transferring confidential information to outside regulators. Sometimes that can be overcome by the consent of the issuer, sometimes it can't. Of course, in the European Union, there's the revised Eighth Company Law Directive, which specifically prohibits firms from providing access to their documents unless you work through the home country regulator. So that, of course, is a huge potential obstacle to us getting our inspections accomplished in the EU.
And could you give us some sense of which jurisdictions are you confident that we will be able to reach cooperative agreements with, and are there others that you lack that confidence in?
Well, of course, as I mentioned, we've been able to do joint inspections with six jurisdictions so far. We've done PCAOB-only inspections in the other 18 jurisdictions, which does require coordination with local authorities in those countries. You know, it's very difficult to predict who will ultimately not cooperate or where we won't be able to reach a cooperative arrangement. And, you know, I would hate to prejudge any jurisdiction at this point.
The release also states, quote, the board will not delay making inspection demands on the firms early enough in 2009 to allow the board to complete the inspections during 2009. What is the likelihood that you will need to conduct some of these inspections before you reach cooperative agreements?
Well, again, I mean, I think I don't want to prejudge any particular jurisdiction. Of course, it is possible that we won't be able to reach a cooperative arrangement. It's when you're negotiating with another authority, it's, you know, obviously you can't control the whole situation. So I think it's possible, although I'm hopeful that we will be able to reach those cooperative arrangements and get the inspections done without any potential obstacles.
And what will be your approach if you don't?
Well, as I mentioned, the staff is recommending that the board not wait indefinitely, and that because the board, we're recommending that the board adopt a one-year extension for the 2008 firms and not make any further adjustments to that inspection deadline. The board would have to make an inspection demand early enough in 2009 on the firm directly in order to complete the field work, just from a logistical standpoint. So at some point in the year, if it begins to look like we're not going to be able to reach a cooperative arrangement, the board is going to have to make that inspection demand on the firm with enough time that it could actually complete the field work for that inspection within the calendar year 2009.
The release also states, quote, because the steps because of the steps necessary to conclude cooperative arrangements and to evaluate the local system, the board has concerns about proceeding if that work can be completed for all of the jurisdictions in which the PCOB has not previously conducted inspections in time to conduct the required inspections in 2009. Would we have been in a position to complete these 50 first-time inspections by the end of 2009 if we had not needed to defer the 18 first-time inspections that were required to be completed by 2008?
Not in my opinion. There were simply too many new jurisdictions that were coming online in 2009, so if we were going to give cooperation a reasonable chance, there just wasn't time. We didn't think it was likely that there was time to complete the discussions and negotiations with all of the new jurisdictions that would come online in 2009, plus have time to complete all of the field work for those inspections by the end of the calendar year. So it's really unrelated to the deferral of the 2008 term.
And I think you've answered this, but could you just give us the answer again? Why did you feel the need to defer these 2009 inspections for 3 years rather than just 1 year as we have done for the 2008 inspections?
Well, as we mentioned, with the 2008 inspections, the PCOB has already established relationships with those regulators and has been in discussions with those regulators, and staff believes that, you know, one additional year is an appropriate amount of time for the staff to be able to complete those discussions and then for the inspections division to complete the inspection. So, you know, 1 year was sufficient for that. With regard to the 2009 firms, you know, in addition to the sheer number of firms and the sheer number of new jurisdictions that were coming online, many of those jurisdictions have authorities or oversight authorities that are just becoming operational. And so we have not yet had the opportunity to engage in really extensive or serious bilateral discussions with them. So by extending giving the board the ability to extend some firms up to 3 years will allow us to go out and talk to each of those jurisdictions, but bearing in mind, of course, that what we're attempting to do is capture the largest firms really within a one-year extension of 2009. 90% of the market cap within 1 year of 2009, by the end of 2009.
The release states, in determining the schedule, the board intends to sequence these 50 inspections such that certain minimum thresholds related to U.S. market capitalization of firms, issuer, audit clients would be satisfied in each of the years from 2009 to 2012, which I think means that you will inspect the firms that audit the larger issues first. Would you please explain in some detail the proposed schedule for foreign inspections from 2009 through 2012 and the process and rationale you followed in developing the proposed inspection schedule?
Well, as I think we've tried to describe, you know, the market capitalization of the issuer audit clients that a firm has, you know, represents, you know, an objective and measurable indication of the potential impact on U.S. investors. So, you know, that is a starting point for if you are trying to determine how to allocate these 50 firms, which ones to do first. We're recommending that the board would do the firms that audit the largest percentage of the market cap in that pool. And so that's what the schedule is based on. Now, of course, as we keep saying, that's the floor. The board could always move a firm into an earlier year that had perhaps been scheduled in 2010 or 2011, you know, for a variety of reasons. And I think probably the most importantly, if the board were to identify a risk in one of the audits that firm conducts, the board could always move that firm's inspection to an earlier year, despite the fact that the market cap of that, the issuer audit clients of that firm would suggest that it would be inspected, you know, in a later year.
The release is also asking for comments on certain disclosures when a registered firm fails to cooperate, where the sovereignty concerns or legal objections of local authorities have not been overcome. How concerned are you that we will encounter this type of situation in the future? And then again, why not just deregister the firm?
Well, again, I think, as I mentioned, when we have discussions with non-U.S. authorities, there's always a discussion of potential conflicts of law. So how concerned am I that the firms will ultimately refuse to provide information due to that conflict? You know, I don't want to prejudge any situation. To date, we've been able to work out solutions where the firms are able to avoid those conflicts of laws. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to do that on a going forward basis. And in terms of why wouldn't we deregister, I think Michael tried to address that as well earlier, in that, you know, that is an option that the board can take after going through the enforcement proceeding process, which can be lengthy. And I think what the staff is recommending that the board do today is seek comment on other options that the board might want to take, because there may be situations where the board feels it's appropriate to impose some sanction but doesn't want to take the extreme action of deregistering the firm.
And as the other board members have encouraged, I also encourage comments to the maximum extent possible on the deferral release. And I'd like to, you know, hear from as many of the groups as possible in terms of recommendations. And then the final question I have is that the SEC recently raised a number of process and substantive issues regarding the release. And I wonder if you would describe the SEC's basic concerns, process, and substantive, and how we've responded to them. I mean, I know this came in fairly late, but they did give us a laundry list of concerns, and I'm wondering, you know, how responsive we've been and what accommodations we've made.
First, let me just to be clear. I think you're talking about comments we've received from the SEC staff, which distinguished from the SEC itself. But it's, as you, I think you know, it's a normal in our process to get comments from them and from the staff in different divisions over there. And before going forward publicly with something, and that's what's happened in this case. And I want to acknowledge that I think a lot of them looked at this and gave us a lot of thoughtful, helpful input in a little shorter time frame than is normally the case, and than we normally like to try to do things. So we really appreciate that, and we've had good discussions with them about their comments. And I think, you know, we've made some changes, some improvements to draft that they had reviewed in light of points they raised that we thought were good points. Now, having said all that, I'm a little reluctant here to sort of seem to speak for them as if in terms of characterizing what anything as a basic concern or anything like that. So I'm a little reluctant to try to sit here and single out points that they've raised, but we have discussed their points with them, and I think made some improvements in light of that. And that's the draft before you today.
Well, I don't want to get this into too much detail in this, but they had about a large number of comments, and I'm wondering, have we satisfied 50% of them, 60% of them? What is the? And I know that they come from the staff rather than from the board, but they do have plenary authority over the board, and I'm just wondering how responsive we've been to the comments of the staff. How responsive have our staff been to the comments of their staff?
Well, let me try to address that. I mean, I definitely don't want to seem to speak for them about how satisfied they are or will be with the draft that's before you. We have talked to them about their comments. We've considered their comments, as we always do. They're thoughtful and helpful, and we've made some changes in light of them.
Steve, would you yield for a question?
Sure.
Is it fair to say that they are not objecting to our issuing, putting this out for comment?
As far as I know, but again, I'm really reluctant publicly to get into anything where I seem to be sound like I'm speaking for them in any respect, or I'm not doing
the SEC, because it doesn't become a rule, neither one of them, until the SEC approves it, and we have discovered that the process moves more quickly when we share drafts,
And I think to, and I think it would be not be appropriate for you people to comment on to speak for the SEC. They'll have ample opportunity to speak for themselves when we send it over. But in sharing drafts, we have been able to share opinions and share approaches and get their response to them. And that, to me, that's exactly the right way to approach. With their having exactly the plenary oversight over us, that we move faster and more effectively and efficiently when we go through the sharing process. But to go further, I think, would be to speak for the SEC, which, of course, we shouldn't try to do.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. I thank the staff. Thank you.
There being no further discussion, I'll put the question to the board.
Charlie. I apologize. I have one point of clarification, if I can indulge.
Good.
Okay. Based on my understanding, the market cap thresholds, 35%, 90%, 99%, are based upon the audits where the non-U.S. firm is issuing an audit opinion. Is that right? Therefore, it does not include anything related to referral work. So when we say that by 2009, 90% of the market cap is covered, it's really market cap based on that approach. Once we have a better information about referral work, that may or may not be true. That's fair.
Well, it would only increase.
I understand.
Yeah. So that would be the floor. So if you found out that a firm had substantial referral work reflecting, you know, a large portion of U.S. market cap, then you could move that firm earlier, as I've described in the schedule, than what it might otherwise, where it otherwise might sit based on just their issuer audit.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions or comments? To note for the discussion, I'll put the question to the board. All those in favor of approving the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The ayes have it. The motion is carried. Again, Rhonda, Michael, and Carl, this has been, as it's clear from the discussion, this has not been an easy task, and we've asked a lot of all three of you, and we're very appreciative of the efforts you've done and your staffs and your have done in getting us to this point. With no further business, this concludes our agenda today, and the meeting is now adjourned. We'll rise from the open meeting and reconvene in the closed meeting at 10:45.